I welcome you to another Friday, the last day of the work week, and encourage you to participate in your local congregation's Palm Sunday celebrations this weekend. If you don't have a home congregation, then find a place where you can go and do all the things that are done with a home congregation. Pray and praise and serve and learn and fellowship. We all need that. If you're within driving distance of the Elkhart East building and you're looking for a place, then we invite you to come to us and check us out as a potential home congregation. We've got some other things that are going on with this spring holy day time that I want you to know about. On Thursday, the 2nd of April, we'll be having a Last Supper where I will be hosting a meal where we talk about all the things that Jesus did at his Last Supper. And then on Friday at 6:30, we'll have our Good Friday observances. And then at 8:30 on the Lord's Day morning, the 5th of April, we'll have our sunrise service. That's S-O-N, rise. And a breakfast that will follow. So you are more than welcome to come and join us for any or all those events. If you are coming to the Last Supper, I would ask that you contact me so that I can get a place reserved for you to make sure there's enough food to go around. Let's go ahead and get into the Word now. I want you to open your Bible to 1 Kings chapter number 17. While you're doing that, let me set the stage. We are 60-some plus years into the split between the southern kingdom of Judah, with its capital city of Jerusalem, where the temple's located, and the northern kingdom of Israel, with the majority of the tribes, and their new capital is at the city of Samaria. Now, the king that's on the throne in the south is Jehoshaphat. He is a really good guy. He is a man devoted to the Word of God. In fact, we've just seen that in his third year on the throne, which was also the 77th year of the 77th sabbatical year for the Israeli people, he sent religious people, religious teachers throughout his entire kingdom. And then presumably, because the 77th sabbatical year was followed by the 11th Jubilee year, I think he sent them out even more. So he's a very good man. But in the north, there is King Ahab. And King Ahab is married to the princess of Sidon. Her name is Jezebel. And when they came together as the big power couple upon Ahab's father's death, it seems as if immediately they tried to swap out the faith of He who is, Yahweh, even though it was in a twisted form of the golden calves up there. But they seem to have wanted to swap that out completely for the worship of Baal, the thunder and lightning god, and Asherah, the goddess of fertility and the queen of heaven, lots of different names given to her. And so northern Israel had always had a problem throughout their existence of not being tied in properly to the covenant of the one true God and the worship of that one true God at Jerusalem. Once Ahab and Jezebel come to power, what little bit of faith was up there in the north gets pushed underground. And so that becomes the background of one of our more famous prophets' ministries, who we meet today. Now, his ministry, we don't have any detailed dates for it, but it seems to be coming probably in the later 870s BC into the early 860s BC during the reign of Ahab and the reign of Jehoshaphat. All right, so that's enough background. Let's dive into the text of 1 Kings chapter number 17 and meet the famous prophet for the very first time in our study. Now, Eliyahu the Tishbite of Tishbe in Gilead. So this is where we meet him and get an idea of his name and where he's from. Eliyahu, we say Elijah, means my God is Yah. So it is a declaration of who the true and living God is. Now Tishbe is a town on the east side of the Jordan River in the area of Gilead. And so that's where he was born, that was where he was raised. But he comes across the river on assignment to go to meet with the king of the northern tribes of Israel. So he came and said to Ahab, "As he who is the God of Israel lives, before whom I stand, there shall be neither dew nor rain these years except by my word." So his mission, God-given, is to present himself before the king of northern Israel and say, God's turning off the taps. God's turning off the water supply for you. No more rain until God tells me that it's coming again. Now, we eventually find out it's going to be 3.5 years, but here, there is no number given to it. Verse 2. After he delivers the message, the word of he who is came to him, that is to Elijah, "Depart from here, turn eastward, and hide yourself by the brook Gerit, which is east of the Jordan." Now that's back over in Gilead, the area from which Elijah hails. So he probably knows this region. Now the word Gerit has the idea of something being hollowed out or cut out or dug out. So it's a description of a region that is next to a wadi, a wet weather stream, that is really rough and rugged. And we've got an idea of where it's at across the Jordan River from the area south Gilboa, but that's the mountains that's over there. We're talking about the place where Elisha is going to be from. There's this eastern end of the plains of Jezreel is where we're talking about. And so on the east side of the Jordan River from that area, just south of the Sea of Galilee, this is where the prophet Elisha goes to hide out for the first part of the drought. So go and hide yourself over there. Verse 4, "You shall drink from the brook," which is the word for a wet weather stream, a wadi, "and I have commanded the ravens to feed you there." Now this is an interesting twist, that he will be provided by birds with daily food, morning and evening. Verse 5, "So he went, and he did according to the word of he who is. He went, and he lived by the brook Gerit, that is east of the Jordan. And the ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning, and bread and meat in the evening, and he drank from the brook." Now, I have to confess, I've always been a little curious, where did this food come from? God's apparently just not popping it into existence. He's having it transported by bird to his prophet to eat, where his prophet is kind of secreted away in the wilderness region by this brook so that nobody knows that's where he's at. I'm going to suggest you what I would do if I were writing the novel for this part of the story. I think these birds are flying in every day to wherever King Ahab and Queen Jezebel are, their court, and stealing this food off of their tables and flying away with it. And so that's my opinion, that's my thinking, is that God is feeding him from the tables of the king and queen. Verse number 7. Now, after a while, the brook dried up because there was no rain in the land. So we find out as we move through this story that the weather pattern of the eastern Mediterranean has been manipulated in such a way that apparently Judea still has rain, you know, south of Bethel, down in the area where Jehoshaphat is reigning as the good king, and they've had revival time, and so they are going to be blessed, and they will be provided with water and with food. But north of that line, the rain clouds are not coming. Now, the rain typically comes starting in the late fall, and it rains regularly and heavily until the very late winter. And it fills up all the water tables and fills up all of the water reservoirs. And that's not happening. So probably after a couple of years of no rain in northern Israel, the brook or the Wadi Kerit completely dries up. And so now Elijah has to be shifted to someplace else where he will be protected until the drought is over. Verse 8. Then the word of He Who Is came to him, "Arise, go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and dwell there." Now, that's intriguing. So he's going to leave northern Israel proper, and he's going to go just north and west of there to an area just south of the hometown of Queen Jezebel. So he's going to be secreted away for the remainder of the drought, the remainder of the 3.5 years, in the area where King or Queen Jezebel grew up. Now, he's going to be taken care of by somebody very specific. "Behold, I have commanded a widow there to feed you." Now, this widow is non-Israeli, but she is visited by God, either in a dream or through an angelic visitation, that something was going to happen where she was going to meet a prophet. And probably she was told, "Whatever he tells you to do, do it." Continue with the story. Verse number 10. "So he arose and he went to Zarephath." Would have taken him a few days in order to get there from where he was at. "When he came to the gate of the city, behold, a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called to her and said, 'Bring me a little water in a vessel that I may drink.'" Now, this is where we find out that the drought is also impacting on the land to the north of Israel, which includes Tyre and Sidon area. And so they also have had no rain for a good long time, and everybody is suffering. So this lady here is out in front of the gates of the city of Sidon, trying to get some meager firewood. We'll find out what she's planning on doing with it in a moment. But the prophet asks her, "Give me some water, please." Now, that's a big ask during a time of drought. But she is willing to help him out. Verse 11, "As she was going to bring it, he called to her and said, 'Bring me a morsel of bread in your hand.'" So he has a secondary request much bigger than the first, and that is, feed me some bread. Her response, as he who is your God lives. Now, immediately, we can see she knows this guy is an Israeli, that he is a servant of Yahweh. Now, is that because of part of their conversation? More than likely. It's possible that the Israelis dress slightly differently than the non-Israelis of the Phoenician area of Tyre and Sidon. But I think it's much more likely that they may have had a very brief conversation and discovered that he was a servant of the God of the Israelis. Now, based on my comments earlier, based on the scripture here, I think she was supposed to be on the lookout for some man coming out of Israel who worshiped the true and living God of Israel. Here's his request. Bring me some bread. And her response is, as he who is your God lives, I have nothing baked, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little bit of olive oil in a jug. And now I'm gathering a couple of sticks that I may go in and prepare it for myself and my son that we may eat it and die. So she reveals to him, we are on our last bit of supplies. We've got one handful of flour. We got a little bit of oil that I'm going to mix with that flour. I'm going to pat it up into a little flat cake. I'm going to use these sticks to heat up my little oven. Then I'm going to bake that bread. My son and I are going to share it. And then that's it. We'll be done. We have no other means of surviving. We're going to die. That's where we're at. Verse number 13. Eliyahu, you know, Yah is my God. Elijah said to her, do not fear. Go, do as you've said. Go and make that cake. Go and make that little flatbread. But first, make me a little cake of it and bring it to me. And then afterward, make something for yourself and your son. For thus says he who is the God of Israel, the jar of flour shall not be spent, and the jug of oil shall not be empty until the day that he who is sends rain upon the earth. So now we come to that moment that I speculate was part of God's communication to her, is that the prophet, in the name of he who is, says, do this for me. God will provide for all of us. Trust me. Trust him. And so now she is in the situation that all of us get put in when we're asked to trust God. Will we or won't we? We have a free will choice at this juncture. Will we act in faith or will we act in disbelief? Here's what the story says, verse 15. So she went and she did as Elijah said. Now, can you picture in your head? I mean, a lot of us have grown up hearing this story many, many times from our youngest childhood. And we picture it. Based on, you know, originally flannel graphs. That's how I first heard the story. Or maybe little drawings, maybe little cartoons, maybe even a little show made with actors where she makes his little cake of bread, cooks it up, brings it to him, goes back, opens up that little flour barrel, that little flour container, and there it is, just enough to make another piece of bread. And the oil container, same thing, just enough to make another piece of bread. And so she makes it. And that's the way she's going to live her life now for the remainder of the drought. Verse 16, the jar of flour was not spent, neither did the jug of oil become empty, according to the word of He Who Is, that He spoke by Eliyahu. He, God, He Who is my God. I believe that this woman had the heart of faith, which is why she was picked. And it is interesting that Jesus, when He has the confrontation at Nazareth, mentions the idea that in the days of Elijah the prophet, He was not sent to any Israeli widow to be taken care of during this time period. He was sent to a non-Israeli. And why was that? Because she had the faith in order to follow through with what was asked of her. Now, it didn't go swimmingly the whole time. There were some hiccups along the way. Here is one of them. Verse 17. After this, and we don't know how long, because we don't know how long the drought continued after he moved to Zarephath. Could be a couple of years that he was at Zarephath. But sometime during that period, the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, became ill. Now remember, she's a widow woman. She's got a son. We don't know how old he is. Seems to be on the young side. They're both being fed every day a couple of times based on the miraculous intervention of God through the prophet Elijah. But suddenly the boy becomes very sick. His illness was so severe that there was no breath left in him. A way of saying he died. And the widow said to Elijah, "What have you against me, O man of God? You have come to me to bring my sin to remembrance and to cause the death of my son." Now, is that accusation or is it a question? I actually think it might be more of a question, an exasperated question. Basically, why? Why did you come here and give me hope? Why did you come here and help us? And now my boy dies. And Elijah said to her, "Give me your son." And he took him from her arms, so that seems to indicate that he's on the younger side, and carried his corpse up to the upper chamber where he lodged. So he's living in a little shack, little room that's up on the flat roof of this residence, and laid him on his own bed. So he lays him out there on his bed, and then he cries out to He Who Is, "Oh, He Who Is, my God, have you brought calamity even upon the widow with whom I sojourn by killing her son?" So even the prophet says, "Why? Why, God?" And there is no an answer given here. The reality is, and we've taken this from other places, such as in the book of Job, that there's free will activities going on all over the place in the world, and some of it has negative impact on other people, even at a distance. There are random events, random circumstances in this fallen world, and bad things do happen to good people, just like good things happen to bad people. And we people of faith very often respond in the same way that people that don't have faith respond. Why? Why is this happening? And so he, Elijah, is in a little bit different situation because he is a prophet. He has supernatural connections with God. So verse 21 says he stretched himself upon the child three times. Basically, he's praying, and he cried to He Who Is, "Oh, He Who Is, my God, let this child's life come back into him again." And so after three incidents of this prayer, because it didn't happen right away. Eventually, he who is listened to the voice of Elijah, and the life of the child came into him again, and he revived. He came back to life. This is a resurrection situation. And Eliyahu took the child, brought him down from the upper chamber into the house, and delivered him to his mother. And think how big of a deal this is to her. And Eliyahu, and I keep reminding you of his Hebrew name, Yah is my God. He said, "See, your son lives." And then the woman said to Elijah, "Now I know that you are a man of God, and that the word of he who is in your mouth is true." I believe this is probably the point of conversion in her life. I think this is the moment in which she moved from an interested seeker after he who is God, who's been feeding her for an indeterminate amount of time miraculously. I think she now becomes a devoted follower of he who is as her God. Because when God speaks through Elijah, things happen. Miracles happen. And even little dead boys are resurrected from the dead. And so he will remain with her, as God said, until the next story is finished and the rains begin and the famine is broken. Mark your place right there. We'll get back into the word next time we have a chance.